Join us for Reverbathon 2025.
Help keep Radio Reverb independent and advert-free.
We're live at Brighton Open Market on Saturday, 12th of April.
And the Hope and Ruin in Queen's Road on Sunday, the 13th of April.
Come and join us.
Come and join us.
On air, on 97.2 FM.
On DAB+.
And at RadioReverb.com. Or in person.
You can make a donation.
Or sponsor a show.
To find out more, go to RadioReverb.com.
Join us for Reverbathon 2025.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
Hello and welcome to the Reverbathon special edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ailey Packham, and myself and Alan Wares are back in the studio, and we are broadcasting live as part of Radio Reverb's annual fundraiser, the Reverbathon. So, what is the Reverbathon? Well, radio stations don't just run on fresh air and enthusiasm. We need funding to pay for grants, licenses, studios. And that's where you come in. Please, if you can, go to the Radio Reverb website and hit that donate button. It doesn't matter how small, the cost of a price of a coffee, the price of a pint or more. But please go to that. And we are joined today. We have a very, very special guest, which basically means, just because we love you, we don't have to talk about the Crystal Palace game at the weekend. We can move on from that completely because we are thrilled to be joined by the one and only Norman Cook. We're delighted to be spending a happy hour with you. Sorry, I had to get that pun in.
Oh, Christ.
And but thanks for joining us. Obviously, you're a Brighton stalwart. You're synonymous with the area worldwide. You know, wherever you go, I've heard that most of your gigs you see a Brighton shirt somewhere along the line.
Yeah, no, it's quite cheery. I literally go anywhere from here to Thailand, and there's always at least one Albion shirt in the it's only happened in the last since we've been in the Premier League.
Yeah,
to be honest, there was like the odd mental expat who just had to fly the flag, but now I don't have time to stop and ask them whether or not they're you know, locals, you know, expats from Brighton, or our growing international fan base. That's been the most interesting thing the last few years is travelling around. And then some of the games I actually watch them with the local, like with the Chicago Seagulls or the Tokyo Seagulls. And so there's little fan bases. And it's that which is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because I just say to them, why did you pick Brighton?
Yeah. But I'm very much like Alphaville. You are big in Japan. And obviously, and so are the Albion. So, I mean, when you're touring over there now, I mean, obviously, Mitomania is a real thing. We see it at the Amex every week. There's the thousands of Japanese turning up and emptying the club shop. And obviously, when we were in Japan on the pre-season tour this season, there was a massive, massive turnout from the Japanese over there. Do you get any benefit from that yourself when you go to the gigs and like and the association of yourself with Brighton and Carew?
Well, the only benefit I got was to watch one of the games in a sports bar with the Tokyo Seagull fan club. But it was quite nice though, because Carrie actually gave me a shirt to take out to them.
Oh wow!
And a little video message. I sat and watched with like there was a competition, 150. Albion fans from Tokyo. We watched the game at some sports bar, and then the person who cheered the loudest got Carrie's shirt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as usual on this show, when we have someone who hasn't been on before, We call them a raw virgin.
And I like the sound. That sounds very appealing, being a raw virgin.
We've had about 1,000 raw virgins, please.
Please take my cherry gently and... Gently but forcefully.
We are before the watershed, so we'll stop that right there. But we've got to talk about your Albion supporting history. Now, we know the elephant in the room. We don't really want to dwell too much on that. But, I mean...
I was a victim of geography. I basically grew up one train stop away from Palace. And everybody where I lived in Red Hill, everybody supported Palace. And they dragged me along. I went to a few games. But they're a difficult team to love, as you could probably know. And so I never fell in love with them. And then when I moved down here when I was 18, I fell in love with the Albion.
I mean, just to put this into context, when I was doing some research into you, and we're going to go back into this a little bit later on as well. But just for the record, Norman has been to more Sheffield United games than Crystal Palace. Let's just put that in. Let's just get it out there.
Yes, I have. That's a very interesting fact, that, yeah. Because for a while, I was in a band called the House Mines.
And really?
Paul Heaton. Well, your younger viewers might not understand this. And Paul Heaton is a rampant Sheffield United fan. So when we were on tour, he would always drag me to away games if we were anywhere near. So, yeah, I used to go to quite a lot of... See, that I never get came for being a closet Sheffield United fan. It's always this Palace... albatross hanging around my neck.
It's because it's bad. That's why. I mean, people, you know, the rivalry like I said, is weird.
You can't help where you were brought up. Yeah. I mean, if, you know, in some people's terms, I should now, as a victim of geography, still be supporting Crystal Palace, and that would be terrible.
Well, I heard an interview where you said everyone should support their local team.
I've lived in Brighton for 45 years, which, you know, so I figure that, I think, you know, I'd stand by that. I think anyone should support their local team.
So do you actually remember the first Brighton game you went to, or what year? I think it was not that, I believe it was 1989, somewhere around there. Was that right?
Oh, I honestly can't remember. No. It would have been at Goulston.
Yeah.
It would have been mid 80s, I would have thought.
Because when you moved to Brighton, it was around the time of the
I was in the House Martin until 88. Probably been in 88, 89 when I moved back to Brighton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was.
I remember it was at the Goulston. I remember it was dreary and dreadful, but we had a laugh.
The Goulston was a very, very, very special place, right? So basically, and we will have these rites of passage. You know, your dad takes you to the first game. You come out and you have that eureka moment when you see that baize of green for the first time, which was not all at the Goulston. Wasn't always green. It was more brown, probably. I was saying to you outside. I remember clearly. My first game, but your first game is actually at Charlton, and you don't remember too much about the game, but you remember about the music.
Yeah, this will probably over the course of this chat, you'll realise that my capacity to remember any facts about football are terrible. Basically, my brain is geared to remember facts about music, so I could tell you who produced a record that was made in 1975 that I didn't even like. So my brain stores all that information, which is good for my career.
Yeah.
But football, I just literally it goes in one ear, one out. I love it, but I just can't retain any facts. And now, so the first game I went to was Charlton v Chester. Basically, my family all came from. My family were either Charlton or Millwall, and my uncle took me. And I don't remember anything about the game. I think we won. They won 2-1, but I can't remember anything about. But I can remember what. Songs were played on the tannoy at half time.
Yeah.
Which is How Can I Be Sure by David Cassidy and Mouldy Old Doe by Lieutenant Pigeon.
And Mouldy Old Doe, the song that was at number one the day I was born. That is.
There's a weird bit of synchronicity there. My first football match was possibly the day you were born.
Oh, God.
That means something somewhere in the universe.
Somewhere along the line. Okay, but you did get the Albion bug. And this was at the Goulston. I think you started off in the North Stand, but you graduated across to the northwest corner, apparently.
The northeast corner, I think it was, with the Mona Stand, we used to call it. It was a little pocket when the East Stand wasn't open. There was one little corner of it just by the north, in the northeast corner.
Right.
And I don't know why they kept it open, but it was basically, there was a very very good cynical sense of humour going on there. but it mainly came from the fact that on a Saturday I was normally feeling quite fragile, and the North Stand was a bit, you know, standing in the North Stand was a bit raucous when you'd had a big night out the night before. and that was just where we gravitated to. And it was lovely because no matter how dreadful and dreary the football was, the conversation and the sense of humour was always top notch. So anybody who was in the North East Stand back in the day and goes to that, I thank you.
But I mean you caught it just before it started to go wrong. But there was one game in particular which I'm pretty sure you remember. I think you remember the kit more than the game. And it was the playoff final at Wembley in 1991 against Notts County and the Chew It wrapper kit.
Yeah.
It was, you missed out on going to Wembley in 83, but you did get to that one.
Yeah, and all I remember about that was the Palace fans draping flags over the A23 when we were driving home.
Well, I'm delighted Alan's now in the room. Hello Alan.
Hi, Alan.
Good morning.
Is my mic up?
Your mic is now up, yeah.
Hello, I'm back in the room. sorry about that fruity expletive. You may have heard way in the distance there. I know we're recording as well. I've just been outside doing some admin. Have you told everyone about the Reverbathon?
Is it the Reverbathon?
It's the Reverbathon this weekend.
Well, explain the Reverbathon to me.
I certainly will. Yeah. This is a community radio station. We've got our licence from Ofcom on 26th of March 2007. We are officially of age now. We can go in and spill your pint. We can go and vote for the Independent Save the Toad and Newt Party nowadays. But we are a radio station, and we don't, as AD said on his video yesterday, survive only on enthusiasm and fresh air. We are ad-free, so we survive basically on donations, grants, and sponsorship. And it's donations where you come in. If you can help keep this brilliant community asset going, like I say, 18 years young and still going strong, it's given us, the Albion Roar, an amazing platform to, within reason, say what we want, play what we want. We're so proud that the Albion Roar is associated with Radio Reverb. And there are a number of community projects that have been out there that we've publicised and given a plug for. So if you're in the mood and you wish to help, do please go to the radioreverb.com website, hit the donate button, and as AD said, anywhere between the price of a cup of coffee and your entire salary, please head over there and donate. If you can keep Radio Reverb on the air, it would be superb. And given the parlous state of local radio in this country nowadays, with the BBC shedding its jobs a year or so ago, and the commercial radio stations all merging to become national, we are probably one of the last bastions flying the flag for local radio. So if we go, then, well, we're not going to go away, but please do donate towards RadioReverb.com by hitting the donate button on our website. And offering as much as you can, it'd be fabulous. So far, those who've already done so. We want to say thank you to Ian Hart Funeral Services, to Attila the Stockbroker, and to Piglet's Pantry, who are our main sponsors. And also thank Susie Tom and Andy Bass, who also chucked in a few quid. They've done so. Can you do so as well? It'd be fabulous if you could.
Absolutely. Okay, well, with being the Albion fan that you are, growing into it and your career growing at the same time, let's picture the scene. Look to the 1999. You're riding high in the charts. The Albion are coming home.
There's a zeitgeist with Brighton at the time, wasn't it?
It was.
It was Mickey Adams, Dick Knight, Bobby Zamora, and your man here.
It was. So whose idea was it to think, oh, I know, it'd be a great idea to sponsor the shirt?
It's funny you should say that, because I always assumed, and I always told everyone, that it was Andy Mack. I don't know if you know Andy Mack.
Yeah, head of Skint, wasn't it?
He was running Skint. No, the head of Skint's actually a gooner, Damien. He's the midfield general, and I assumed that it came from Andy Mack, but I spoke to Andy the other day and he said it came from Dick. it was one of Dick's great ideas was, you know, how do we, you know, we're coming back to Brighton, we need a sponsor, who's the most Brighton thing? It's like, oh, this record label that are doing, they're putting Brighton on the map, because we are quite proudly Brightonian rather than having to go up to London. So, apparently it was Dick's idea.
He's very persuasive like that.
I think Dick had himself said that one of his sons or grandsons are pointing out, do you realise this really cool record label's actually, you know, in town? So I assume, therefore, that Dick approached Damien, Andy, yourself, whoever it was. Were you part of the conversation?
I wasn't part of the conversation. I was off on tour, and I just got this phone call going, how do you fancy sponsoring the Albion? And I was like, yeah.
No.
And they like, and I'm like, what do you mean sponsoring? It's like, well, it'll be skint will be written on the shirt. So I'm like, no. Because, I mean, for a football fan, you know, to have your name on on the team's shirt is like Roy the Rovers, like dream come true. So, yeah, I was just like, yes. Immediately. But, no, I wasn't involved in the business. I don't do business stuff. And
But I mean, you.
No, I did. Mind you, but like you said, Dick's very persuasive.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That was the in, and then he hooked me further and further in.
I was about to say, does he still, even now, 25 years later, does he still have his hand cupped on your testicles?
Yes. he texted me last week and said, we haven't been out for lunch for ages, dear boy, let's meet up. Yes. And I was like, and I did the same thing. I thought, oh, it'd be lovely to see Dick. And then I was thinking about
Dave. Snigger. No sniggering at the back there.
And I was thinking, it'd be lovely to see him. And then I was like, going thinking dates. And I was thinking, oh my God, he's going to tap me up again, isn't he? Ah, oh, phone it for it again. Yeah, I mean, if Dick invites you out for lunch, it would be a very entertaining.
Bring someone else's wallet.
Yeah, but you will get tapped up for something. I mean, these days he's working almost exclusively for charities, so it's hard. It's even harder to say no to him. But he's
actually a regular in a bar that I'm off to tomorrow, actually, in Ferring of all places. So yes, I do see him there, holding court, still drinking his red wine.
Still telling his stories.
Stories. Each one's getting taller. You know the Gary Nelson story we tell from 87, where he beat three defenders, and now we've told it after 11 pints of heavy, it's now about 74 defenders.
Playing a 1-2 off
a passing jet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a Dick Knight story.
Yeah.
Getting taller and taller, but, you know, until basically Dick Knight is the Shard.
I'm not going to go there.
No, don't go there.
I'm not going to go there. But, I mean, it's when you look at the club now and the way it's run, and it's very, very professional.
Yeah.
It was a little bit more ramshackle back then, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's one of the endearing qualities about it. I mean, like I said, you know, it was a thrill to have our name on the shirts, but we didn't realise how much that made us part of the club. Mm. Like, and for instance, until then, you know, where they Dick invited us all as sponsors to come in the boardroom before the
boardroom
porter cabin with Dean, and he's like, you have to wear suits, and we're like, none of us possess suits, let alone would wear them to a football match.
Define suit as skin.
And so he thought about it, and he said, well, okay, let's relax the suits only rule in the boardroom. Mm. And then he found that great fun, and then he said all the other directors, you know, from the other teams all love it because they don't have to wear a suit on match day.
Absolutely.
So he would take good ideas and run with them, and if they challenged the status quo, that was fine, and everything was run on a very friendly, family-based, which is great.
Yes.
Wouldn't have got us probably into the Premiership in a million years, but
it
was a beautiful way to run. I don't
think with Dean we'd ever have got there. But the point about the sponsorship is it was a kind of a match made. Like I say, was it ragtag or something? Was the phrase you used just now?
Ramshackle.
Something to begin with R. But that's the point. That sort of that casuality, that sort of informality was, and I think it still is, very, very Brighton. It's certainly very Dick Knight. But also, I think that where certainly the Albion benefited, and I'd like to think Skint did too, was the nature of the sponsorship was, it wasn't just a case of someone turning up and with all ego possible, sticking their name across the front and that'll do. It was a very sort of interactive, constructive relationship, wasn't it?
Well, it was my first shirt sponsorship. I assumed they were all like that. I didn't realise where I thought it, we gave some money, and I didn't realise that it meant we would be invited to every game, that we would become part of the process, and obviously this is during the whole kind of campaign for the Amex. I didn't realise we would get drafted so into that. But it was a very symbiotic relationship. Yeah. Like you said, it was good for the club, but it was also good for Skin.
I was going to say, why was it good for Skin? I mean, was having an Albion on their coattails? I mean, obviously having Skin on the Albion's coattails was brilliant. It was dead cool, even for an uncool person like me. But did the Albion's association, did it do anything for Skin?
It did for how we felt. It did for our relationship with the community.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it sold us any more records, but it made us feel good. It made us feel like we were part of something big. I mean, you know, any Brightonian always feels that kind of pressure that if as soon as you're successful, that you have to move to London, you know, or you can't be successful unless you commute up to London every day. And there's that whole sort of thing of like, no, we want to do this here in our city on our on our own terms. Mm. And that was very much what football teams have to do, but what we wanted to do as a record company and what I wanted to do as an artist. I mean, from before, when I was doing Beats International, I used to write Made in Brighton on the back of the record sleeves. Just because I didn't go, you know, everyone was like, oh, you can't use a recording studio in Brighton, you've got to go up to London to make a proper record, you know. It's like, no, it can be done locally. And so we were very pro that, and it just fitted that narrative. And it fitted, I mean, I think if we could afford to still be the shirt sponsors now, it would benefit us more because the club's worldwide.
Oh, yes,
it was still a very cult thing in those days. I love it. I mean, to this day, every time I see somebody wearing a Skin shirt in the street or at a game, I still get that little beam of pride. You know,
we're kind of the gnarly sort of vets of those war years. We still get that sort of nostalgia trip of one. What Skin meant to us, but also those Skin shirts, you know, I say the zeitgeist of Bobby and Mickey Adams, and you know, well, basically we'd bottomed out and we were on our way up. It was still our future was still uncertain, but and that, I think Skin gave us hope. That was the point.
But the delicious irony, which I think Dick enjoyed as much as anyone, was the fact we were Skinned.
I was about to say, because as much as you were talking about the Albion's boardroom, inverted commas, was porter cabins.
Crash.
I can't say that I did actually visit the Skint offices, and it wasn't really all glass and steel, was it?
No, I mean, we were as lackadaisical as
Dick's operation. A non-leaking roof. Because you're okay.
What I found unusual about it as well was the fact that you could actually walk into the Virgin Megastore in Brighton and they were actually selling the Skin Brighton shirts in there.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, which is unheard of for Brighton, because we basically, particularly now, I mean, we won't license any of our shirts to like Sports Direct or anything like that.
I don't think we really had the economic clout or the power. I mean, don't forget, only 4 or 5 years ago, we were actually wondering whether we were going to exist anymore, let alone, you know, sort of, excuse me, be on the cusp of the journey that we've been on. But I do want to, I assume we're doing this chronologically, there is something I do want to say, and it's obviously very much part of the time of the Albion sponsorship, the Skin sponsorship, was, and I don't know if you're okay talking about the Big Beach Boutique number 2, the big one.
Yeah.
I always sort of think as much as, you know, there is obviously the other stories attached to it, it is probably the one event, more so than any that this town city has ever had, that put it on the world map. What were your feelings at the time about that?
That was a momentous day in my life. It wasn't the best day of my life.
No.
it could have been and should have been, maybe. But, it was a historical event, you know, and not necessarily historic it was like the best thing ever, but it was just to flood the city with that many ravers who just see the
But it was also
chaos.
A world event, wasn't it?
Sorry?
It was a world event, wasn't it? We know that people were sort of like, you know, tuned in from, you know, E4 put out live, but people in Brazil, in America, in Europe.
Well, that's,
saw
I mean, that's,
that.
Therein is my journey, because I travel the world for my job. So I'm a good barometer of where Brighton is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Around the world, in, you know, in terms of just like cab drivers, you get in the back of a cab in, you know, Chicago, and the cab driver says, where are you from? You say Brighton. Now, what he says next is very interesting. Because it used to be like Brighton or Quadrophenia, Brighton Rock. So the reference point, the cultural reference points were Quadrophenia or Brighton Rock.
Okay.
The two films, obviously, they go international. And then, in a small way, I think Skint Records put Brighton on the map.
Yep.
The Big Beach Boutique probably did. But now, if I say I support Brighton, because then the second question would be, what football team do you support? Yep. And I go, Brighton Hove Albion. And they go, oh, no, but which proper team? You know, we've never heard of them. I can't do the American accent. But, you know, like, and so, but now, when you get in there and you say you live in Brighton, you say, oh, do you support the Albion? And I'm like, really? And they go, oh, yeah, my time had such a good game last week. You know, it's like you watch the, you know, you the other side of the world, yeah, and you watch our team. So, yeah, I mean, there's things that put Brighton on the map. And it, and chronologically, it was Brighton Rock, Mods and Rockers, and Quadrophenia.
Yes.
Skint Records, and then now the Albion.
Premier League. Because, like I say, I don't think that any of us, I mean, as much as we wanted to go to the promised land of the Premier League, I don't think any of us were really prepared, bearing in mind we hadn't been there before, for how much of a global, you know, institution it is.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, talking about putting things on the map, Al, we are live from Brighton's open market.
We are,
as part of the Reverbathon here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and you may be listening to our podcast. Al, it's the Reverbathon. What can you do to help?
Well, first thing we can do to help, actually, is because we're doing this at 10 o'clock in the morning rather than midday, we don't have the Lindy Hoppers outside.
This is very true.
Oh, the Lindy Hoppers, they're just so noisy. They're all these horrible people enjoying themselves. It's terrible. Now, here we are at the Brighton Open Market. It's a wash with buzzing, a buzz of people. It's a hive of activity.
It's not, the one noise I'm not hearing is jingling of coins.
No, but if you could,
the folding of folding.
I was about to say, we please, as they said in Only Fools and Horses, paper only, because the coins scratch the pewter. Yes, if you could go to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button and give us as much as you can to help keep this brilliant community asset going. We've got to thank Ian Hart, funeral directors. We've got to thank Attila the stockbroker and Pie Maker to the Stars, and just about everyone else, including 400 major sporting events venues around the country. Piglets, Pan. For their support, and also to Susie Tom and to Andy Bass for their support. Please do hit the donate button. If you're just waking up, where have you been? It's Saturday morning, it's sunny, and if you're feeling flushed, then please do go to the radioreverb.com website, hit the donate button, and help keep Radio Reverb on air free of charge.
Right. Well, and we're here with Norman Cook, also known as Fatboy Slim, and I am wearing a shirt, Norman, that has Palookaville written all over it. Now, whose idea was it an album launch in
Dick
the stadium Knight with the world's worst stereo?
It was Dick. I mean, Dick actually came to us, and I had a new album coming out called Palookaville, and he said, "I feel the club should do something to thank you and give back. You know, how about you're always promoting us? How about we promote you?"
Yep.
That's how this deal should work. And he said, "You know, let's do something about the release of your new album." And we were like, okay, what can we do? He said, well, let's, you know, well, there's a match the day your album, you know. Dick kind of looks at things, and he looked at them. The release date was a home game. And he said, well, you'll do something around the match, and then let's have a special shirt. So we concocted the idea of doing a Palookaville shirt. Went to the FA, found out you can't change the shirt design halfway through a season.
Really?
Well, no, it's all to protect the fans. You can't just keep putting out shirts because if they want to buy replicas, you're only allowed three strips per season.
Looking at you, Crystal Palace.
And but then Dick found a loophole that you could have the name of the stadium on the shirt, and he worked out that we could change the name of the Withdean. For 1 week, we changed the name of the Withdean to the Palookaville Stadium. And because we were playing in the Palookaville Stadium, we could have Palookaville written on the shirts.
Wow.
It was just like some weird little loophole that he'd found. So it was all his idea. He ran the whole show. Yeah. I went on and said hello to everyone just before the game. And we ended up with this lovely cult shirt, which is very collectible these days. And I'm always very impressed when I see someone wearing one, AD.
Well, it's not as collectible as the one that our former sponsor, Phil Shelley, has. He's got one of the prototypes that was maroon with yellow sleeves on it.
Do you recall this?
I'm colourblind. And,
so is he.
Perhaps that's why. No, I don't. I mean, there was various. Yeah, I mean, I've got a goalkeeper's one for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, there was actually it was that wearing this kit at Leeds where do you remember David Yeldell, the goalkeeper?
Yes,
and he was wearing the pink goalkeeper shirt.
Well, no, he wore it only in the second half. I think what it was that his goalkeeper shirt was clashing with, I think either the Leeds team or the referee or something like that. And yes, they changed it at half time into a pink shirt, and he had to then go and stand in goal in front of their cop. Yeah. And he made a couple of worldy saves from the likes of Ian Hart and who's the other fullback?
Mabaduka?
No. Who's the other fullback who took the free kick? Gary someone. If our listener remember. Could remind us, but he made a couple of worldies, and actually, to be fair, he got, and you know how parochial Leeds fans are, he did actually get a standing ovation from them for playing so well. But
yeah, I mean, I remember that shirt only came about because Michelle, when he saw the catalogue,
Michelle Kuipers,
he wanted one of every single colour.
Yes, and he got it. But like I say, here we are as a third division club, or third tier club. We were never, I mean, the fact that we played three seasons out of 12 at Withdean / Palookaville is in the championship, in the second tier, is absolutely astonishing because you look how close, you know, the champ. We were never going to get that high. I don't think we ever got higher than about 16th anyway. But you look at, you sometimes forget that how close the championship is to the Premier League, and that's where we were. Even though resources at Withdean would never have allowed us to have got to the Premier League. But we did actually. We were so creative. Let's say with Skint, bringing in Norman to be the who. Let's face it. You got sort of, Christ knows how many awards at about the time that the Skint. I mean, what gongs are sitting on your mantelpiece at the moment?
He's got a Grammy. You got a Grammy.
I've got a Grammy. Yeah.
Good. Well, I know you got the Grammy at the top of the tree,
got a few Brits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you remember off the top of your head the years and for what
no,
ones?
Absolutely not, no. I don't do years.
You've just got some nice decorations on the mantelpiece.
I've got a well-stocked mantelpiece.
Lovely.
That's amazing. Okay, but I mean, we're going to talk about getting out with Dean in a second, but I absolutely loved those days. It was something, it was something special about it.
It was the togetherness, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was like, I mean, it was a fight. I mean, it was a life raft, but it was a very successful life raft. We got a lot of trophies while we were there. And, you know, I forged friendships just being thrown together. A lifelong friendship.
There was a different atmosphere at the Withdean, dictated by the fact you were at some, you know, a school athletic. My kids used to do their school sports day there.
Likewise.
And that dictated a different atmosphere around the club and at the games, which I loved. You know, I still remember those years with fondness. Yeah. They weren't like, you know, they were the war years in terms of the economic survival of the club. But I think we played some great football there.
Yes.
Everybody would come and just go, I can't believe you're playing your football here. Yeah. You know,
your away fans are miles away.
Worthing stand. Yeah.
Since found out that a lot of the reasons we won was a lot of the players were freaked out when they came to play us.
Really?
They found it difficult to get that big match atmosphere when it looked like they were playing in a park.
So kind
in
of what, almost under enthused almost.
Yeah. But there was a very, you know, all the stewards, everybody there, it was very friendly, it was very bright, and it was very community. Yeah. And I did love that. And I every now and then I do, you know, miss that kind of community spirit.
Yeah. I think that what we did earlier season, you were there, was when in the Sussex Senior Cup, the Brighton was the under-21s. They played the old Vandenians, wasn't it? And so it was kind of our first return to Withdean since then. And there was about 1,000 people bought tickets there, and obviously old Vandenians cleaned up. Fine, good for them. But I think it was just kind of like, for me, it was like closing the chapter. It was like going to see, almost like going to see an old girlfriend. You realise, it was the right decision to go, kind of thing. You know, because you loved that thing. It was
the love wasn't.
Yeah, but the thing is, the love wasn't always requited, was it? It was sometimes quite unrequited, wasn't it? The love affair with Withdean.
It's weird because I revisited it a couple of years ago. I played in a charity game.
Right.
I played. We've got a Martlets hospice football team, and we played against Albion Legends. So I was playing against Guy Butters and all that lot at the Withdean, and that was weird. That was like, I don't know, revisiting an old girlfriend and having a little cheeky one for all the time. I still like the naive charm of the place. Yes. I mean, my favourite thing about the with Dean years was the guy who used to phone his wife up when we scored and get her to set off fireworks up the hill.
Do you remember that? Yeah. I knew the fireworks, but I didn't realise. I assumed it was someone listening on the radio.
This is what I heard. What I heard was the guy who was at the game.
Yeah.
Because there would always be a slight delay, and he had to ring his wife and go, "Let one off, darling." That. And do you remember?
Actually, lit a match as well.
Do you remember the scream? The person used to scream took corners.
Yes, I remember that. So this is all. And weirdly enough, I assumed that you're in the bike shed because
was in the bike shed.
Yeah, because we're all in the open south stand.
Oh, we could still hear. We could still hear the scream.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You could.
But then you could mostly hear Danny Cullip, couldn't you, as well?
Yeah. But it was the only stadium in the world we can get sunstroke and pleurisy at the same time.
As a postscript to that, there was one firework that didn't go off properly and ended up still burning under the south stand. It didn't go bang. It just went. Oh, I hope there's not too much wood under here.
Okay, but the campaign trade to get out of there was long and hard.
Yeah.
Then you having to go out to Downing Street with Des Lynam.
I had to pimp out my own newborn son.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? Yeah, when just a week after Woody was born, there was some meeting at Hove Town Hall that Dick wanted me to go to. And I said, I've got the baby. I've got a newborn baby. I can't come. And Dick said, we'll put an Albion hat on. And that'd be a great photo opportunity. And I was like, he said, we'll get front page of the Argus if you bring your son. And I'm like, you want me to pimp out my own newborn son? And he went, yeah. And so I did. Dick talks you into these things.
Yes, I was about to say, he really has you cupped, doesn't he? Still, yeah. You feel that.
He tickles in such a delightful way.
Yeah. But, I mean, one person that was vital in that campaign was, and we've just lost him, which was John Prescott, of course.
Yeah.
He was, you got to meet him a few times, didn't you?
No.
You didn't?
Oh, no, when we went to Downing Street, we delivered. There was all the sort of photos outside the famous door.
Yeah.
Then we were allowed in, only into like the entrance hall.
Yeah.
And then somebody came downstairs and said, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for delivering. Yeah. The bizarre thing was, and this is a Brighton reference, that the last person that I expected to meet on my first and only ever trip to Downing Street was Ange, who used to run the Zap Club.
Good grief. How?
Oh, I don't know.
Was she working at number 10?
She was working, yeah. She worked for Tony Blair. But I hadn't seen her. Last time I saw her, she was still running the Zap Club. And then, so there I'm in Downing Street. She comes down the stairs. I was like, all right, Norm. And I'm like, Ange, what the are you doing here?
What the bleep are you doing here? Yeah.
But you could go. I mean, is it true that you once had violin lessons with Keir Starmer?
Yeah.
What?
I went to school with Keir Starmer.
Right.
Where we lived in Reigate.
Yeah.
And he... I mean, there's that thing when people go, I went to school with so-and-so, and it means you were at the same school at the same time. We were in the same class for 5 years. So I knew him really well. And I don't know which was weirder for him all those years later to, you know, see the house martyrs or something going, that's Cook from 4J. Because I know it's pretty freaky for me to read about, you know, the new director of public prosecutions being called Keir Starmer. I'm thinking, Keir Starmer? There can't be more than one Keir Starmer. No. It's got to be that Keir Starmer. And then to watch his rise, you know, and then jokingly go, well, you know, one day he might be Prime Minister. And, like, careful what you wish
for. Hang on, if he can get a knighthood, why can't you?
I don't want one.
I just can't say his name without, like, I'm thinking of Informer by Snow. But it's...
I don't get that.
Keir Starmer.
Okay. Okay. Was
that
a
little known football song?
Yeah, no.
They probably sing it at the Arsenal.
Yeah, so that's it.
I just saw the tumbleweed going past. Okay, well, we did get to the Amex, and I mean, that's well documented, but.
You know what? Do you want to know a really interesting fact?
Yeah.
The only building from the, what was the Polytechnic, now the university, the only building they had to knock down to build the Amex Stadium.
Yeah.
Was the geography block where I studied for 3 years doing my degree.
Do you know what? I made a wild assumption that you studied down at... I haven't had any breakfast. Well, so I can't remember. You know the theatre, the arts one down the bottom, Salisbury building.
No,
I was right, so you were up on the Falmer campus.
I didn't live up there, but I commuted there every day. I used to spend long afternoons looking out, gazing out the window at Bennett's Field. never dreaming for one day it would be the Field of Dreams for me. Yeah. That was, I would just be, you know, absolutely gazing across this barren field, not knowing what was going to happen.
How much asbestos did you breathe in then?
Because
I know they had specialists to take that whole thing down, because there were 1960s buildings that had asbestos absolutely everywhere.
I think you only start breathing it in when you knock it down. I think you're safe.
Oh, right.
Well, okay. I turned out all right.
Do you remember anything about the groundbreaking ceremony they had down there? Yeah, I know you were there, because I was there with you.
I remember digging a hole. Yeah. With me.
And remember they set up a goal with the cranes. And,
oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The diggers, yeah.
And basically they had John Sullivan, who had just been playing up at Shrewsbury in the LDB Cup thing.
Oh,
He came in full kit, and Nicky Forster was there in full kit.
Right.
And they used these two diggers as a crane, and then Dick came up and he took a penalty and missed.
I mean, yeah. I mean, this goal in inverted commas was easily three times the size of a regular goal, and he completely shanked it. I think Martin Perry showed him up in the end. So.
He did. Oh, he absolutely levered it, Martin Perry.
All I remember was marvelling at digging a little hole to stick the corner flag in.
Brilliant.
And thinking, this is where I used to do my geography lessons when I was
and well, even then, field trip. Even then, you couldn't envisage it, could you? Just see this swamp.
Yeah.
You know, there's where the water has run down. I mean, you could see, obviously, they'd done a few sort of digging bits, but you couldn't envisage it, could you?
Yeah.
No, I think, to be honest, only Dick and Tony. I remember Tony's vision. Tony knew exactly what he was doing.
Still does.
Because he used to say things, you know, we'd say, like, if we do build a stadium, how big will it be? And he'd be like, 30,000, 35,000. At this point, we were getting like 4,000 a week.
Exactly, yeah.
And we were like, if you build it, they will come. And he had a dream. So Tony had a dream. Dick had a dream, but Dick's a dreamer.
Yes.
Tony had a dream and actually knows how to make that dream a reality.
Absolutely. As I think, as they say, Dick Knight crossed it in, Tony nodded it home.
Okay.
You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB Plus, on your smart speaker, all around the world. We're not just here in Brighton and Hove. It's the Reverbathon weekend. The Reverbathon is our fundraising weekend. This is a radio station which survives on donations, grants and sponsorships, and in order to remain ad free, if you could help us out by heading to radioreverb.com, scrolling down the page past all the pictures of Mark Johnson and Pete Jones to the big donate button, and if you could chuck in a few shekels on our behalf, that'd be great. We have licenses, rent rates and equipment to pay for. It is a community radio station. We have a full license from Ofcom, and we've had so for exactly 18 years. We are 18 years old now. That's the Albion Roar, which is a founder member of Radio Reverb. And Radio Reverb itself is 18. If you could help us, that would be absolutely brilliant. Just head to the website, radioreverb.com, and hit the donate button.
Okay. Now, Norman, only you and Rod Stewart have ever actually played gigs at the Amex. Are you surprised by that?
No. I'll tell you for why. I mean, I got to play it because at some point during one long march or thing, Dick Knight said, you know, you do realise, dear boy, if we get this stadium, you've got to play it, do a big party, have one of your parties in it. And so that was always the promise, and the club were true to that. So I did it. But no, but what we found out quite quickly is putting on a gig in a football stadium is very, very difficult.
Was it logistics or acoustics?
The logistics, the acoustics, the anything that ends with X.
Yeah,
and it was. I mean, it nearly bankrupted me. It nearly killed
what?
Me doing it. It was. I mean, until about 3 weeks before, when the sun came out and we sold a few more tickets,
I was
in an enormous financial hole. And then, but you know, just serve, you know, because nightclubs are built for people to dance in.
Yeah.
Football stadiums are built for people to, you know, to play football and watch football in. And they haven't got the toilet facilities, they haven't got the bars, you know. They're like, oh, we'll put some extra bars in because you lot might drink a bit more than, you know. It's like your average person apparently drinks 0.6 of a pint, two-thirds of a pint if you average it out.
I've averaged it out, yeah.
Your nightclub, your average person drinks like 12 pints, you know. And so there's 12 times in a month we couldn't, you know. It was just really, really complicated and difficult to do it.
Yeah.
I would love to do it again, and we're kind of thinking, one day, you know, there'll be a moment or, you know, especially with the club's history. You know, when we win the Premier League, if we win the Premier League, I've definitely got to go and do it, you know, to celebrate it. But then there will be a time to, but it's just, it was really hard work. Yeah. And I think because we did a lot of the work, then when the club did it on their own with Rod Stewart, they realised.
Yeah,
it wasn't just them moaning that this is really difficult. It is really difficult, and if you haven't got the infrastructure, I mean, we had to tell them when they were building the Amex that you've got to leave a corner open.
Yeah,
you've got to leave a corner open to drive the trucks in if you want to ever have events in there, because
first and foremost, it's the ambulances, isn't it? If you have a repeat of a major incident, isn't it?
Well, the ambulances take up this much room. Arctics take up a lot more. And Wembley had to rebuild half the stadium because, when they built the new Wembley, they forgot to leave room for the trucks to drive in. And then someone said, well, you can't have any more gigs because the trucks have to be able to drive right up to the stage. You can't lug all that equipment through the corridors.
Yeah.
So the Amex isn't the perfect venue. It meant so much to me to do it, and I'm really glad I did it. But I wasn't in a hurry to do it again unless...
It's also, I mean, we found this out during the Women's Euros as well. If you've got a load of people going to the Amex, like we go every week, we know the ebb and flow of it. Obviously, they've just built the terrace now as well, which takes some of the strain off the transport issues. But when you've got a gig there or an international game, you've got people who don't go there every week, and something finishes, everyone heads for the exits, and they don't know about the ebb and flow and how to manage.
Well, there's that, the logistics of that as well. I also remember...
Well, add the fact that everybody's off their nut
there's that
at the end of the show, and that makes it even more complicated.
I remember speaking to someone associated with The Who, actually, because they were doing a Quadrophenia tour, and I said, well, surely they could be playing Brighton. And they said that, well, the bare minimum they want is that they've got to have at least two gigs at the Amex. If they're going to have the Amex, they've got to have at least two gigs
there. Yeah, that's the other
thing. Yeah, so the finance is one to pay for it and the other one so they can get paid themselves.
Yeah.
And also, like you say, they looked at the acoustics. I mean, thankfully, The Who are a very, very loud band and therefore can actually probably overdo sort of any acoustic problems. But they just found it just wouldn't work. And like I say, the only... And to that end... It's actually now Sussex County Cricket Club. They've usurped all the ones, and the likes of Rod Stewart and Elton John and The Who have played there.
Yeah.
You know, and I've no idea whether the tower blocks at the back there are acting as a kind of a wall, an acoustic wall, but...
Well, I could talk to you about the ins and outs of it, because I've been asked to play at the cricket ground and that. It comes with different problems, but for an Elton John and a Rod Stewart, it's all right. Everything has to end really early.
Yes. Yeah.
That's their deal with the people who live in the tower blocks, and there's a noise limit on it, which I assume would be all right for Elton, maybe not so much for The Who.
Yeah, but they were good that day. They were on form. But the other thing is that I think probably with your gigs, it has to be so much more intense, and therefore, like you say, that's why it works in a nightclub, because everyone's in one place.
And if you want to get really nerdy about it, they deliberately built the Amex to keep the sound in so that when we sing, it reverberates around, makes it louder. And that was a conscious decision to enhance the games and enhance our community spirit, but acoustically it's no good for
loud. Does it just bounce straight back?
Yeah, basically the idea is it bounces straight back at you, which is not good for a PA. Sure.
Okay, well, since those days with Dean, we've moved on significantly as a club.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're at the Amex, we're challenging at the top end of the Premier League, and with that came a European tour. And...
You had a blast, didn't you?
You had a blast.
I did. I mean, not as much as I would have done, because the thing is, my gigs are booked 8 months in advance.
Right.
And if we're doing... I've played at various World Cups and things. So we had the model of me playing gigs around football tournaments or about football.
Sure.
So when the album got into Europe, it's like, oh, yeah, we can have some fun here. I could, you know, all I could do is get a gig in whatever city we're playing in, either the night of the gig or the night before. And that gets me to the game, and it gets that feeling of, you know, and the club are really up for it. But then we're like, you know, so where's it going to be? It's like, well, the draw's on September the 1st, and you've got 10 days before the first game. It's like, I can't put a gig on in 10 days. And so basically we were sitting there. I was actually in New York with, we were like a film crew, because we were going to make a documentary about the European trip. And then the draw came out, and it's like, oh, first game, can't go. I've got a gig in, I'm in Japan that day. Second gig, oh no, I've got a gig there. And so out of the six European things, I could only make one home game and two away games.
Yeah.
But I had my agent on standby, so it's right, okay, Athens. We can get a gig in Athens, yeah, fine. And then, what was the other one?
Rome.
Yeah, so those two. Luckily, there were cities that where we know tons of promoters. Yeah. I play there a lot. Yeah, so we could put the gig together really quickly. Yeah. And so we found clubs. I mean, the Athens one worked like a dream because
we got
a result that we weren't expecting. Everybody was on cloud nine. We took over the club. You know, because the model of me doing those things is I normally play to 50% locals and 50%, the travelling fans.
Yes.
But somehow the Albion fans managed it. It was 75% Albion.
You got Tony and Paul dancing.
Yeah, I had
Tony. Why does no footage of
raving.
This exist?
It does exist.
What, Tony and Paul?
I don't know about Paul, only Tony.
What's his move?
Yeah,
like?
and it was just, yeah, and then I was trying to keep up things together for the 25% of the Greek fans who were there to see Fatboy Slim rather than celebrate a football game. But things were getting round, and then I think I played Freed from Desire, and then it all kicked off, and then they were the whole crowd started singing "He's One of Our Own," Fatboy Slim, "He's One of Our Own," and I just got all carried away, and then I played Sussex by the Sea.
Yeah, absolutely.
I said let's get this out of our system now. I dropped the music. We all sung Sussex by the Sea.
And well, I did read, and I think you should revisit this, but you refused to remix the Goldstone rap, and this is
all
the boys in the old
that
right
still
blue.
Stands. I'm afraid.
Well, you're refusing to do
yeah,
it.
I'm still refusing.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do with dog mess, isn't there? Really,
it's awful. I don't know, the boys in the old right blue is actually
all right. No, it's not. It really isn't. It is that usual supine, horrible football, chanty, jaunty, vomit laden. Anyway, listen, we've had another donation. Thank you very much indeed. Erica from Chester, who's loving listening to the show, she says, "Thank you so much. It's great having Fatboy Slim on the radio. Please, can you DJ my 50th birthday later this year?" Erica will ask, but you're going to have to remortgage everything. So anyway, so thank you, Erica, for supporting the Reverbathon.
It's quite date dependent, I'm afraid, Erica. If I can't get a night off to see my favourite football team play in Europe for the first time, I'm sure as hell can't get it off for your 50th birthday.
Absolutely. But that's the point. I think with the European tour, we lucked out in as much as we had three capital cities and a second city, as opposed to some god-awful backwater in Kazakhstan. That would have been a new one for you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, equally exciting for me. It would have been more of a challenge if it was Kazakhstan.
God, yeah.
Yeah, especially because Athens, I'd actually played it a month before.
Right.
In my normal job. Athens particularly, it was such a beautiful day, and to be, you know, that was my first experience of the Albion in Europe, and just wandering around Athens and bumping into Albion fans on every street corner.
It was the same in Rome. It was weird.
Everybody was just sightseeing, and every site you went to see was just round full of happy Albion fans.
So as someone who was actually saving for my wedding and therefore couldn't go to any of the away games, was it the whole notion of Albion playing in Europe and therefore even on an even bigger map? Or was it the fact that, like say, you go to these cities hundreds, thousands of miles away and find in your mates,
I mean, you're walking past the Trevor Brooking Fountain in Rome, and you've got the Colosseum, and you've got this ancient, eternal city of all this fantastic architecture and history, and you're walking around the corner, "Hello, Marcus." Yeah. "Steve, how you doing?"
It was like we'd unofficially taken over those cities for a day.
Yeah.
It just became
peacefully
our
as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, the whole everything about it is beautiful. We just couldn't believe the excitement that we were in, that we were in Europe, but the excitement that we were in a beautiful historic city that you would have wanted to go to anyway, where they're not a football match. A lot of people, you know, took their whole families and went for like a few days.
Absolutely.
Just because an excuse to see Athens or Rome, you know.
It's kind of interesting
the away fans coming here as well. I actually found, of the four lots of fans, I think the Athens fans were my favourites. They were actually very respectful and very much into it. Although I did like the banner that we gave the Roma fans.
About the pizza.
About the pizza. Yeah. And I'm not going to repeat what it was in response to. But so listen, we're getting to the end of this hour here on Radio Reverb. Coming up will be Rock's Rich Tapestry with Goaty Phil Jones, supported by Sharita Jones, a.k.a. Mama Cherry. But just before we go, before we close the show, we asked this of a lot of our guests on the show. Norman, what does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
It's just your local team that you support through thick and thin.
Yeah.
But it's a lot more fun when it's thick rather than thin. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed supporting the Albion so much. I mean, when I started going, it was probably our worst in terms of playing.
Yes.
It was when we were at the bottom of the bottom tier.
Uh-huh.
And we were dreadful. We were really, really...
We weren't good.
And I didn't fall in love with the football, but I fell in love with the sense of community. And then going from the goal sense to the withing is all very, you know...
Yeah.
But I loved it. But if you can go through all that and enjoy it, then the idea that you go and you actually get into the Premiership and that you get into Europe and then you actually beat the top six teams, it was just, you know, the ice on the go. So yeah, it's supporting your local team because you have to, but then them turning out to be rather good.
Yeah, so I think it's a case of for the trials and tribulations we went through, I think where we are now is karma, isn't it?
It's either karma or testament to the work of Dick Knight and Tony Bloom.
Yes. Absolutely.
And Paul Barber.
And thousands of Brighton fans. I think we're done, aren't we?
Yeah, that is all we've got time for. So thank you to everyone who's donated. Don't forget, you still can. Reverbathon is going on all weekend. Al is DJing at the Hope and Ruin tomorrow with his show Move On Up. But as for now, this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb with special guest Norman Cook. Yeah, with Alan Wares, I'm Aidy Packham. This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, online at Radio Reverb. And
it's everywhere, it's isn't everywhere. It?
And of course, on our podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Please donate if you can. See you next time. Bye. Get you.